Even if you never watch a single snap in a football game, you may know the name of Keenan Lowe. Because his highlight reel includes more than football plays, it includes that famous video of him working as a security guard at Park Rose High School in Portland, disarming and hugging a student who brought a gun to class. Keenan Lowe tells the story of that moment and many more of his return to Oregon in a new book. He's the author, with Justin Spisman, of Hometown Victory, a coach's story of football, fate, and coming home. Keenan Lowe wowed Oregon football fans with his skills at Jesuit High School in Portland, then at the University of Oregon, where he played in the national championship game against Ohio State. Keenan was an assistant coach in the NFL when he came back to Oregon and lived the events in this book. The publication date is today. Keenan Lowe, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Hey, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
It's very much a pleasure. Start with the anniversary. It's been almost 3 years since the gun incident. I mean, when I watch it, my head is spinning. How's yours doing?
You know, time does heal all, so I'm doing pretty good about it. You know, it was tough those few months after it happened, for sure. You know, I was reeling a little bit and kind of searching for answers. But as time has gone, I've grown to just continue to realize how lucky and how blessed I was to be put in that situation, and how my instincts, you know, kind of carried the day there as well.
So you start the book, though, with getting hired as the head coach at Park Rose High School after you had been an assistant coach in the NFL. Why did you come back to Portland?
Yeah. I've grown to love the game of football, and I played it ever since I was young. You know, my dad introduced me to the game, and, so I grew up with football as kind of my mentor, my life teacher, you know, and obviously I went on to go play in college and coach in the NFL, and really one incident brought me back to Portland, brought me back home, and that was the passing of my best friend, Taylor Martinick. He actually passed away over an opioid overdose, an accidental overdose of fentanyl, and you know, during that time, it was really, truly the toughest time of my life. You know, I was sad, I was depressed, and I was in a dark spot, just trying to search kind of for the meaning of life, really. So I came home to mourn and be with friends and family. And while I was home, I started to realize just what was really important. You know, I started to play back our friendship, play back my life, and I'd been gone for so long playing football and then coaching in the NFL all over the country. I started to understand just from his passing what was truly important, and what became the most important to me was my friends and family and those experiences that you don't necessarily get back, you know, once they're gone. So I didn't want to miss out on any of that. I wanted to be around my little brother playing football and be around my family and friends, and that's ultimately what brought me back to Portland and what led me to find an 0-23 football team in Park Rose High School.
So when you came back, you didn't know there was the opening there, right?
No. When I came back, I volunteered and helped out with my little brother's high school team. And then I was kind of just searching for what was next and kind of searching for a new purpose, really.
Mm-hmm. Well, Park Rose was certainly a special case, as you point out. They had 23 straight losses in football by the time you got a hold of the program. And then give us a more general sense of what kind of shape the school and its environment were in.
Yeah, and in high school sports especially, it's kind of a game of resources. And certain schools have more resources than others, and certain communities have more resources than others. So Park Rose is a school in a community and in a district that just doesn't have a lot of resources. And from that, you know, the sports teams are affected and kind of the quality of certain things in that school are affected. And, you know, Park Rose is a school that's, you know, often down on their luck when it comes to sports. And, you know, the student body there, it's a tough student body. You know, there's kids that come from single parent homes. There's kids that are homeless. There's kids that suffer through certain things that maybe some other students don't in upper middle class communities. And so Park Rose is just a school. It's a tough school with a beautiful student body, a beautiful spirit about it. And this is all things that I learned after getting hired there. You know, I knew Park Rose as just the school just that was bad at sports. And you know, I knew there were tough kids there that needed some mentorship and needed some help. But as I kind of dug my teeth into the project of helping these kids and being the mentor to them, I really started to learn their every single day struggles, and I started to live that with them, and I got just such a whole new perspective on exactly what our young people are going through.
Well, that first assembly that you called with the prospective players, you know, where they showed a highlight reel of your stuff at the U of O and stuff. I mean, what was your first order to the young men in the room, and what was the response?
Yeah, the first words I spoke to them is I stood up in front of the room of all the hopeful football players that were, I think there was about 50 of them in that room at the time, to meet the new head coach. And the first thing I asked them to do was take off their hoods and take off their headphones and just, you know, kind of sit up straight and told them that if they just show me respect, I'm going to respect them. And that was the very first thing I told them. And that's how I've approached life. And that's what I've learned over my life. If you just do the basic thing of show someone respect, the natural response is that someone's going to show you respect in return. So that was literally the very first thing I asked them to do was just take off your hoods, take off your hoodies, take off your headphones and just show me respect. And I promise that I'll show you respect in return.
And it paid some dividends down the road, as we learn as we go along further in the book. Keenan Lowe wrote with Justin Spisman, Hometown Victory, A Coach's Story of Football, Fate, and Coming Home. We'll pick up the conversation with Keenan in just a minute or so here on The Exchange, with a reminder on the way that he does have a function coming up at Powell's Bookstore in Portland. That is tomorrow, May 11th at 7 p.m. So if you happen to be in the Portland area or want to make a special trip, you'll probably be part of a crowd coming around Keenan Lowe to talk about the book and the release and his life in football and certainly off the football field as well. We're back on the Jefferson Exchange with Keenan Lowe and you in a minute 15. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of JPR, I'm Jeffrey Riley. Our guest is Keenan Lowe, the former wide receiver for the University of Oregon Ducks football team. Played the national championship game, receiving passes from Marcus Mariota against Ohio State back in the day. His life has been an interesting one. After the Ducks, he was an assistant coach in the NFL and then came back to Portland after a tragedy in his life and realized that was where he wanted to be. And so he set up shop as the football coach at Park Rose High School and took a team that had 23 straight losses and turned it around, ultimately winning a conference championship. These stories and more, and yes, the incident where he disarmed the student with the gun, told in his book, Hometown Victory, A Coach's Story of Football, Fate, and Coming Home. You can join us on The Exchange, 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Keenan, you were talking about that first meeting with the prospective football players and asking them to take off the hoods and the headphones and just show each other respect. So a life lesson ahead of any football lessons. And help us understand, because you had just spent the previous season, I guess, with Colin Kaepernick, who really helped underscore the priorities for you, football versus life, I would assume.
Yeah, I was in such a unique position and perspective during that year when I coached for the 49ers under Chip Kelly. And that was the year Colin Kaepernick decided to start his protest and take his knee, which ultimately ended up being his last year in the NFL so far. So, you know, I was in a really cool perspective. I got to look on the news and see on ESPN and the media frenzy that was around it and kind of the narrative that was taking shape. But I also got to sit down and have lunch and dinner with Colin Kaepernick at the facility and actually talk to him openly about what he's thinking and kind of his life story and my life story and the similarities that we had. And we actually grew into having a friendship. And obviously he was a starting quarterback there and I'm a low level assistant, but we had a lot of similarities. And I grew a lot of respect for him because I was able to see the inside and ask questions. And I understood what he wanted to do and what he was trying to do.
Does it make any sense in the world to you that he is not playing football and hasn't since the kneeing incidents?
You know, it makes sense, but also it doesn't make sense. And I mean that he did make a lot of people angry as far as organizations and the corporation of the NFL and why they were so angry about it, you know, in that time, I don't know, you know. But to me, I guess it does make sense when you have to be the trailblazer of a certain movement. There's someone's got to pay for that, for starting that. Mm-hmm. And since then, the NFL has changed their tone a bit, right? They've gotten behind the social justice stuff that's been happening, and they've started to support those certain types of acts and those certain players that want to stand up and speak their voice. But it's not fair, obviously. So it makes sense why he's kind of been, blackballed, I guess, for lack of a better term, because he kind of was the guy that kind of fell on the sword for everyone else. And do I think he can still play football? Absolutely. I mean, he went to a Super Bowl, and he's a great dude. He's a natural leader.
Hmm. So talk about leading your own football team, though, at Park Rose. I mean, you got some weight room workouts together early in your time as coach. You got a core group together. There was some skipping. And this is I guess you had to pick your battles carefully with the students, didn't you?
Yeah, it was a fun time, and it was me learning how to be a head coach while kind of being thrown into it, you know. And I jumped at the opportunity, and I knew I was ready, but I also knew I had a lot to learn as a 26-year-old first-time head coach coaching kids that have never even won a single high school game. And again, I had a tough group, I had a tough bunch, and I had to learn how to communicate with them and how to hold them accountable. And I had to learn the strategies of what would work for me to lead a group of young men and teach them life lessons along with football lessons.
Well, and your dad set up your thinking when you were young, as you point out. You mentioned that he's the guy who got you interested in football, and he said you better respect the game or the game ain't going to respect you. You broadened that thinking over the years, though, to something more than just football, didn't you?
I did. It started as a kind of just a funny tagline. Maybe he heard it in a movie or something, and he would always say it to me, and I would always say it back, and it was kind of our inside joke. But just as I got older, that phrase of just respecting the game, or the game isn't going to respect you back, that started to become just more profound as I grew and started to just learn and just grow into a young man. And to me, that just means, you know, respecting the process of doing things. If you respect your process of your job or your goals, then your job and your goals are going to show you respect back, you know. And I in turn, I think it applies to life as well. If you respect life and you respect people, people are going to respect you back, and life is going to respect you back, and things will work for you.
But Keenan, how hard a message can that be to impart to a kid in a beat-up school in a poor part of town who doesn't feel like he ever gets any respect?
Yeah, it's a tough message until you show it to them, and then until you show them that, you know, as hard as you guys are working right now, keep pushing forward, because this stuff is going to pay off. And we use the game of football to do it, and I love sports as just a life teacher for young people. And we used it at Park Rose where, you know, I almost had to convince them, you know, before we had even played a game where, hey, trust me, if you guys continue to work hard at something, I guarantee you, you will get something out of it. It's going to work for you, you know, and they learned it through football. And once they got their first win, they kind of saw like, wow, we can, if we just apply ourselves, if we just work hard and stop making excuses at something, then it's going to pay off and we can accomplish whatever we want. And again, there's a bigger life message in that.
How far could you go in helping players? I mean, with their various life circumstances, I mean, I assume you had to draw some lines.
Yeah, I think in high school football, it's as a coach, and not even high school football, but high school sports in general, as a coach, I mean, you do whatever you can to help your players. And you don't sign up to coach in high school. I don't care what sport or what gender you're coaching. You don't sign up to coach high school sports because of the paycheck. You do it for the love of the game, and you do it for the love of the kid. So it's really whatever the kids needed. I did my best to try to do that, whether that was getting them cleats and equipment, or or, you know, lending them rides home and picking them up for practice and things like that. And then ultimately, as I worked as a security guard, you know, the ultimate thing was to help someone that was in a mental health crisis. So it's just whatever was needed at the time. I think every high school coach will tell you that they're willing to do it.
Well, you mentioned the cleats, so let's go down that road, because anybody who's ever watched University of Oregon football has wondered, wow, where do all those uniforms and all those shoes come from, and where do they go is a question that you answer in the book. You got to keep all those cleats you wore?
Yeah, I'll tell you what, the equipment closet at the University of Oregon is endless. I've never even seen the end of it, you know, the back of it. So, I mean, every game we got a new pair of cleats, and obviously it's so well-funded with Nike and Phil Knight, and we were really lucky at the University of Oregon. And back then, you kind of took it for granted because you were just playing football in college, and that was just kind of your regular life was getting all that gear and cleats. And then once you leave, you kind of realize, like, wow, I was really, really lucky to go to that school that was so well-funded with equipment. And then, you know, I ended up keeping all my cleats. So, you know, I had upwards of 30-plus, you know, pairs of cleats of all – of green, yellows, and chromes, and all different kinds, and luckily I was able to save all those, and I was able to hand those out to some of those kids on my team that weren't able to afford cleats, and it was a special moment, and that's what I tried to do my whole time there, was if I had something, whether it was equipment or time to give or a ride to give, I tried to give it to them.
Keenan Lowe is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, a great wide receiver at the University of Oregon back in the, several years ago, let's put it that way. He's written a book about his experiences in life and in coaching football at a school that hadn't won a game in 2 years, and disarming a student who brought a gun to the classroom. His book is called Hometown Victory, A Coach's Story of Football, Fate, and Coming Home. If you'd like to visit with Keenan, you're welcome to join us on the Exchange at 800-838-3760. By phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So you can certainly see to the players' needs, but, you know, they got insides going on here, too. And a couple of different examples you give us. One of them was J.J. Hudson, one of the best players on the team, but he had a bit of a secret he was harboring about football itself and his feeling about it.
Yeah, he was an interesting case, because he was a kid you looked at that was super talented and athletically gifted, and really of the top percent of kids in this state as far as just his athletic ability. And he didn't necessarily love the game of football. He ended up, you know, coming out and giving me a chance as a new head coach. He ended up quitting the team in prior years, and he decided he wanted to give another chance. And through conversations with him and through experiences with him, I learned from him that he didn't like the game of football. He just liked being a part of a team and being around his friends. And I think that's the special part of high school sports and just high school friendships in general. It's you just love to be a part of something, you know. And he was a kid that just wanted to be a part of something. Not necessarily the game of football, but he wanted to belong to a team. Mm-hmm. And that was powerful.
So, you know, I guess, you know, being part of the team was more important than winning or losing, but we talked about the fact that the team hadn't won a game in 2 years, a 23 straight game losing streak, I guess, by the time you got there. You knew lots of winning in your high school days at Jesuit and at the University of Oregon. Did you know what losing felt like?
Yeah, I did, because that year in San Francisco, we really didn't win too many games, but it wasn't a bad year. I didn't think it was a bad year, because I got so much from it and I learned so much about myself during that year. So I didn't look at it as a failure as a year. And we went 2-14, I believe, in San Francisco. So to me, it's the success of a team isn't necessarily wins or losses. You do want to win, you know, and that's obviously the point of competing in sports, is to win. But I knew that there's so much more to winning and losing with sports and being a part of a team. So at Park Rose, yeah, I knew they hadn't won in 23 times. And I just wanted to come in and give them something to be proud of. Whether we won or not, I wanted to create a family within that team so they could feel a part of something. And if we did it the right way, and I'm confident in my football ability in mind, that if we did it the right way and practiced the right way and prepared the right way, that we would ultimately win, and they would get that feeling for the first time of what it felt like to walk off the field a winner.
So how did you walk that line, though, Keenan? I'm curious to know, because obviously a lot of belief in yourself and the system you installed, but how do you encourage the kids and yet still temper their expectations?
Yeah, it just comes down to trust. And me and my coaches, we did what we could to try to just get them to understand that we were going to be in that fight with them, and that we were willing to commit to them before they were willing to commit to us. And I thought that was an important step as a coach, especially a new coach, a young coach, that has some, you know, that has a little bit of a resume of playing football and coaching the NFL, is that I wanted to come in and prove to them that I was going to be in this fight every single day with them. And I wanted to prove to them that I was willing to commit to them. And once they saw me do that, once I shared with them some of my stories and some of my background, they opened up to me more. And then all of a sudden, they started to trust me more. And then it became easy. Then it became, hey, if we do A, B, and C the right way, I bet you and I guarantee you that we're going to win football games, guys. Just continue to trust me. And they did trust me, and we ended up, you know, winning games and turning the program around. But I think the whole foundation of that whole thing was just trust. Kids trusting us and us trusting the kids.
And the commitment you talk about, not just you to them, but them back to the team and each other. And there are examples here of people who had some difficulty with that. RJ Artis is one person you single out here, a talented player, but he had some anger issues. He stomped off the team and then decided he wanted to come back. And how did you handle that?
Yeah, he ended up, you know, having a blowout and doing something that was detrimental to the team. So, you know, at that point, he had a lot of chances, and you know, I was told about his story by the administration, the people around the school, about him, that he had a lot of potential, that he was such a good kid and had such a good heart, but he just suffered from some anger issues, and it came out on the football field. So ultimately, I had to kick him off the team to teach him a lesson that there are consequences to his actions. And he had never really learned that, because nothing that's mattered to him had been taken away. And he loved the game of football. And ultimately, I decided to take it away in order to affect his life, to teach him that lesson, that consequences, things have consequences. And once he kind of learned his lesson and he was kicked off the team for a few weeks, we ended up letting him back on the team. And it kind of came full circle where he learned that he can't just do whatever he wants, that he has to listen to authority to an extent, and he has to be a part of the team and do everything that his teammates are doing as well.
The team really initiated that, though, didn't they? It wasn't just between you and RJ.
Correct. Yeah, the team really wanted him back. You know, they had a meeting, and it was fun to write about that and put that in the words in the book. Is they kind of had a secret meeting, but they didn't know I was on the other side of the wall, you know, able to hear them, you know, and it was a really proud moment, you know, for me, just because it just showed that they were actually becoming a real family. You know, they got together on their own and decided to really talk about and hash it out that they wanted their friend RJ back on the team after they felt like he suffered enough consequences for his actions. And ultimately, I came around the, you know, outside of that door, and they were super surprised to see me. And we had a discussion about it, and I agreed with them. I said, you know what, if you guys think we can do this and you think RJ has changed, you know, I trust you guys, and he's a part of our family. Let's bring him back. And we brought him back from his suspension, I guess, or when I kicked him off the team. And then he started to thrive. And then ultimately, fast forward to the end of the year, he got back on track and he graduated high school, which he wasn't on track to do. So it's those things like that. Those are those real life wins that mean the most to me.
Yeah, it's great to hear that he graduated too. We have a email here from another graduate. Paul on Sterling Creek is a 1979 University of Oregon graduate. He says, as a U of O grad, I'm so proud of Mr. Lowe and his leadership, both on the field and off. Thank you, sir. I'm looking forward to reading the book.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Thank you. I really appreciate those words.
So, you know, one of the major challenges here is we talked about the 23-game losing streak. It became 24. You guys got shut out in your first game. So you know, you come into this game with all this confidence, and there's an offsides penalty on the first play, et cetera, et cetera. how do you then get a team with a 24-game losing streak and a shutout in the first game up for the next game?
Yeah, it was tough. In that first game, like you said, there was so much confidence and just all the work that we had done as a team and growing together. And then you get there, and then it doesn't happen for you. And you get shut out, and you kind of get dominated. So then we start the season 0-1 and add one more loss to that losing streak. And I had a moment there that I was able to kind of put in words where I started to doubt myself as a young coach. I started to, you know, beat myself up because I was responsible ultimately for everyone. As a player, you're only responsible for yourself ultimately. You know, as a player, when I played football, you know, I was responsible for my job and my assignment and playing the best of my ability. But as a coach, you're responsible for 40 some odd kids and six or seven other coaches. You're responsible for a whole crew there. And I'd never felt that weight on me before of a loss and letting everyone down. That's what I felt like I did. So I think a part of getting the kids up was also a part of just getting myself up for the next week and stop beating myself up that it's okay. We lost the game. I just wanted to win for these guys so bad so they knew how it felt. So they responded well, and it was an awesome experience getting that first win and breaking that streak.
Hometown Victory with Keenan Lowe, back on the Jefferson Exchange in 1 minute. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Our guest is Keenan Lowe, the former University of Oregon Duck wide receiving great who played the national championship game against Ohio State many years ago. Well, not many years ago, but, you know, a few years ago. He has a whole bunch of highlights in his reel, but they include more than football plays. They include that famous video of him working as a security guard at Park Rose High School in Portland, disarming and hugging a student who brought a gun to class. That was just one of his duties there. He was also the head football coach and took a team that had 23 straight losses and turned them into conference championships in short order. You can conference champions. You can join the conversation about his new book, Hometown Victory, A Coach's Story of Football, Fate, and Coming Home, by joining us by phone at 800-838-3760, by email jx@jeffnet.org. There are some little details in the book that illuminate some larger situations, and we talked about how Park Rose is not in a great section of town and a fairly battered-looking school. But it gets down to things as fine as like that first offsides play might have been caused by the fact that your players weren't used to being on fields with good lines.
Yeah, it was unfortunate for us. It's just because equity is such a big thing in high school. And again, I go back to resources. And we just didn't have the resources to have a turf field like most schools. Or to have lines and have the crew of people, maintenance people, to put those lines on the field. So for the most part, we practiced and we tried to teach them the game of football without a proper field. So we were really on just a piece of green grass, really, and no lines and no depths and no hash marks and sidelines and all those things. So we kind of get thrown into the fire in our very first game. And it kind of bites us in the butt a little bit on the very first play of the very first game where one of my players sees a line, so he just lines up on the line. It's the first football line he's seen all the whole time we've been coaching there, and we ended up lining up offsides. So that was the very first play of my head coaching career. It's kind of funny to look back on.
Truly. But, you know, things got better, obviously. I mean, you won the second game, and these guys are developing as players and as human beings. Talk about the development you saw as the season went on.
Yeah, it was a beautiful thing to see and a beautiful thing to be a part of. When you see young people start to believe in each other as a team, but then more importantly, you start to see those young people start to believe in themselves and start to come out of their shells. It's really a beautiful thing, and it's, again, I go back to just the power of high school sports in general. For me, I think it's just such a great thing for the development of young people, men and women, just to have confidence in themselves and learn how to cooperate with others and be a part of the team. And then there's lessons of leadership in those high school moments and then trying to accomplish something with your best friends. There's nothing like it, and it's a time in your life that you're going to remember forever, but it's just you never get back. And if anyone's ever played high school sports, they know exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I have too. But and let me tell you something. It makes me proud to know that somebody who is 5'9 or perhaps shorter, like in my range, did so well.
Yeah. It wasn't easy.
Yeah, I can imagine. Was there any talk of you? I mean, did you get close to playing in the NFL?
I did. I did a tryout as soon as my senior season was over at the University of Oregon. I did a tryout for the Arizona Cardinals, and it was a quick tryout, just a few days, and I ended up not making it. And then I gracefully kind of decided to hang up the cleats, and I was kind of happy with my career and how it went, and how far and how long I played, and some people are willing to endure beating themselves up and to continue to push towards that dream, but that just wasn't a huge dream of mine, and I wasn't willing to kind of sacrifice my body, and I knew I could do something else just as special.
Mm-hmm. Which you did with the coaching. Coach, you know, as we haven't mentioned the fact that football coach at Park Rose High School, not a full-time job, what other things did you have to do to bring in money?
Yeah, so ultimately I ended up being the security guard there as soon as our season ended. So that job started in January of that school year. And before that, I was kind of doing odd jobs. You know, I looked for part-time work. I looked for jobs that started very early in the morning and ended in the, you know, early afternoon, so I could have my afternoons freed up so I could coach the kids at Park Rose. So I ended up working at the Max Club here in downtown Portland, and essentially I was cleaning rooms and setting up events for things in ballrooms and things like that, and you know, vacuuming rooms and picking up garbage and doing things like that, and that in itself was a humbling experience. You know, I went from an NFL sideline and an NFL, you know, coaching paycheck to kind of working as a you know, a glorified garbage man inside the Max Center. So it was a humbling process, and I learned so much about myself. But that, all that being said, I was so happy to do that work because it freed me up for my afternoons so I could continue to coach these kids and go after my passion.
Yeah, for the folks that don't know Mac, we're talking about the Multnomah Athletic Club. As you describe it in the book, it's like a country club in the middle of the city, but there it is, and all that athletic stuff. So that plus the security guard job, and so let's talk about that day, May 17th, 2019. What's the FAB, and why were you called there?
Yeah, so the FAB building is a fine arts building, and the Park Rose campus is made up of two buildings. There's the main building, and then there's the FAB building. The FAB building is about 100 yards away from the main building. So I was called to go get a student, and it's the type of call we got, you know, maybe 30, sometimes 40 on a busy day, 30 to 40 times a day, where we just call, every period you get called, hey, security, can you go get this kid? Or, hey, security, can you deliver this note? Or something like that. So it was just a regular Friday, and I get a call to go grab a student from a classroom in the FAB building and bring him to the front office. So I go outside and walk through, the 100 yards of driveway, of parking lot, and go into the FAB building. And I ended up making my way to that classroom and asking for that student. And the student wasn't there. And as soon as I kind of turned back to the doorway, the doorway pops open, and there's a student standing there with a shotgun. And it was a surreal moment in my life, and it was like a movie where everything kind of goes slow motion.
Yeah.
And I was able to analyze everything very clearly and very quickly, even though there were kids, you know, screaming and running out of the classroom, and so in a fraction of a second, I go in and as he whips out the gun, I go and kind of charge forward and get both hands of mine on the gun, and he has both hands of his on the gun, and we get into a little bit of a wrestling match, and ultimately I ended up getting the gun away from him, and then that's kind of where you see the video start up, mm-hmm. where I hand the gun to a teacher and do my best to console him and decided to give him a hug instead of hold him down.
So you're talking about the analysis now, but do you remember thinking anything at the time?
Yeah, it was really crazy because during the whole thing, I was thinking very clearly, and I was very much in control of what my next move was going to be. So, you know, as soon as he walked in, I instantly saw his eyes and understood that this kid is going through something in this moment. And I instantly understood that just by looking at him. And then I looked down and saw the gun and understood, oh, this is a real gun. This is really happening. And then I was able to act. And then once the gun was out of the picture and I got the gun away from him and handed it to the teacher, then there was no threat. You know, I'm an adult. This kid is a student. There's no more threat. So to me, it became about consoling the kid and letting him know that there was someone out there that was there to help him. I could tell he was in a very, very dark place in the very middle of a mental health crisis. I could tell in the craziness of what was happening around me. So I decided to act in the way that I thought was right. And to me, that was give him a hug and tell him that I care about him.
Which you know, again, this is the part that's on the video. Once you get the gun out of his hand, and you got the gun in one hand and an arm around the other arm around the kid, you're trying to get a teacher to take the gun away. But the impulse, though, just to hold on to him. I mean, where did that come from? Telling this guy that you cared about him.
I think that came from the times I had coaching at Park Rose. And the students that I got to develop a relationship with, and me understanding the struggle of that student body and what some of those kids were going through. And, you know, I had a kid that was homeless that played on my football team. Mm-hmm. I had kids with anger issues. I had kids that had to babysit their little brother while practice was going on. You know, I had kids that were in real life situations. They had to take the public city bus to get to school. You know, I had kids that were really going through real life things. And by me coaching those kids while also doubling as a security guard and living with them and seeing them every single day during the school days, you know, I really got a good feel of the pulse of the school and what these kids were going through. So then in a moment where a kid really needs me in that moment, and again, as a security guard, I had broken up a lot of fights during the year. I had responded to a lot of different calls in that school. Nothing like this, but in that moment, I was ready because I knew exactly what these kids were going through, and I understood that he was in a mental health crisis as soon as I saw him.
Now, obviously, so many people have seen the video in the 3 years since it happened that they've attached the term hero to you fairly often, and you say, nope, not a hero.
I think there's heroes, you know, everyday heroes in a lot of places. And I think the act of what I did was definitely heroic. But there's heroes in that school before I even got there. You know, the math teacher or the English teacher that decides to stay late at work to help a student, you know, taking time away from their own family, but they decide to help a student so they can pass a class. You know, that to me, that's heroic in itself. There's everyday heroes around us. So I think anyone and everyone can be a hero if you're willing to help someone in need, and if you're willing to be a good person and be a good person to other people. I think that makes you a hero. So the act of what I did was heroic, and I'm just blessed and thankful that it ended up the way it ended up, and that I was the one that was put in that situation for him.
What do you know of the fate of the young man who you disarmed?
What I do know is that he got mental health help after that. He didn't do any jail time, and you know, that it was a mental health issue, and that he got help for it, and he's still getting help for it. But from what I've understand, he's essentially recovered from it. And you know, his life is saved, and he's going to continue to push forward and try to make something good of his life.
And what do you think of when you think about the state of mental health care in American schools and society more broadly?
I think it just continues to need to be a conversation, and it is. It's starting to pick up as we start to see all these sad cases of depression and suicide, especially coming out of a pandemic and just all the madness that's happened in the last few years in our country. It's I think people are finally starting to understand that we need to start talking about these things with our young people, because our young people are going through, they're going through a lot. And I think my book, Hometown Victory, does shed light on and give perspective on some of the things that, that our young people are going through that we might not necessarily know.
So, Keenan, I was trying to catch up to where you are now. We moved on from Park Rose to become head football coach at West Lynn High School, went from there to UCLA to work on Chip Kelly's team, then went to work with Scott Frost at Nebraska. Is that still a thing, or have you ended that too?
Yeah, I'm out of college coaching now. You know, when the pandemic started, we all kind of took a step, you know, everyone took a step back, and so high school coaching wasn't really in the works for me anymore, you know, so I took a step back, and that's actually when I started to write this book, is when the pandemic started. I you know, just like a lot of us, I had a lot of time on my hands, so I said, you know what, I'm going to finally do it. I've always dreamed about writing a book and telling my story, and so I started writing a book, and shortly after I started writing this book, Chip Kelly gives me a call and hires me at UCLA, and then I move on to Nebraska. And so now I'm back in Portland and putting this book out and going to continue to try to help the community.
The book is called Hometown Victory, A Coach's Story of Football, Fate, and Coming Home by Keenan Lowe with Justin Spisman. Keenan will be at Powell's City of Books in Portland May 11th at 7 p.m. Keenan, thanks so much for spending time with us to talk about your book and sharing the story with us.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate your time.